Welcome to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. I'm your host, Christina Frazier. In this week's conversation, Butch Rugby talks about the PlexPod project, a next-generation office space in Westport Commons. Developed by a Lenexa-based co-working community, the project occupies 3,600 square feet of historic school buildings on a 12-acre campus near 39th and Main in the heart of Kansas City. Mr. Rugby will tell us about his background and delve into ways that real estate development can be used to direct a city toward a more harmonious, artistically and historically relevant, and prosperous future. This show was recorded on October 8th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church here in Kansas City, Missouri. The show's format begins with our speaker's presentation, followed by a short break, and then concludes with the question and answer part of the program. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's join the conversation here at 90.1 FM KKFI.
George Baggett, I'm with the Forum Committee. The Forum is essentially established to promote controversial and thoughtful topics for the Kansas City area, I'm going to add another device to that. We're actually promoting critical thinking in the community, so one of my favorite topics. It is my great pleasure to introduce you to my good friend, Butch Rugby. Butch and I have been friends for over 40 years. We were regulars at the corner restaurant every morning, having breakfast and talking about all sorts of Kansas City topics. And then every time I turn around, this guy's buying a piece of property or fixing up a theater or doing something important and beneficial to the community. And then to find out that he's involved in this Westport project was not a shock to me, because the man does good work. So it's my good pleasure to introduce Butch Rugby, and now you'll find out why I like him so much.
Well, good morning, and it's always a pleasure to be back at All Souls. You know, I know a few people in the audience here, Michael, and I see Walt and George and several others, but it always reminds me of my dear, sweet, departed friend Don Lyon, who was such a great part of this community, and, you know, a very, very good friend of mine and really everybody he was around. So I'll tell you a little bit about myself and what I do and why I do it. But I grew up in Liberty, Missouri, up north of the river, which, you know, back in 1977, crossing the river down into south was just like I went away to college somewhere far, far away. You know, you just didn't cross that bridge back then. It was the city. But I came down here in 1977 to go to UMKC, and that was because UMKC was pretty affordable. It was a university education, and I could pay for it by roofing and painting houses. I believe my first semester at UMKC, 15 hours, was $277, and I earned $275 roofing a building. Late mother's old little bitty one-horse real estate office, and she had some insurance damage, but she didn't have much insurance, and my father had been dead a couple, 3 years. So she told me, she got a book and gave me the book on roofing and said, I'll give you $275 to roof this building. And, you know, that seemed pretty good to me at the time. And, you know, when George talks about the different things I've done or anything I've done, you know, I always remember, if it wasn't for my mother's tenacity and convincing me that you are going to college and you are going to pay for it. Well, pretty much, you know, she didn't pay for college. She gave us something better. She gave my siblings and I all the ability to take care of ourselves and do the things in life we wanted to do, and not just accept life as something that passes by. So, you know, with that, I've been very, very fortunate. I went to UMKC. I got a film and radio television undergrad degree, and then I went to law school because I was going to go be a Hollywood movie producer. I went out to Hollywood afterwards and decided, instead of working in a studio somewhere writing real estate contracts, I would work on a movie crew. So I worked as a grip, stunt crew assistant, bit actor. You know, I managed to go about 35 years without revealing to my mother that I jumped off a building into cardboard to get a T-shirt that said Stunts Unlimited, which, you know, then it slipped at a party one time just a few years later. But when I was in California, I realized after a couple of years of working out there that really I was having I loved it. I loved Hollywood. I'm not one of these guys that hated California, Los Angeles, but I really love Kansas City. And I came back to take care of a couple little rental houses I had bought in college, and ended up deciding I would rather be behind a projector instead of a camera. So I started Screenland Theaters, which was the garage of the old Mid-Central Fish Company building. And before that, I had bought my very first old building down in an area at 18th and Wyandotte, which was then known as the Old Film Row. And in that building was a 20-seat screening room. That was 1994, and that's what convinced me to buy the building, which is probably not advice I would give somebody looking at real estate. But in a way, it is. You must be passionate about the building, about the real estate, about the land, about the community. If you don't do it, you're just working in a commodity. And that would be just like working at a job. So I knew early on I wouldn't. I bought the old Commonwealth Theaters building at 18th and Wyandotte and fixed it up. And I was doing it four offices at a time, borrowed a little money at a bank, and then I rented to four of my lawyer buddies and had a conference room and a secretary and a law library and a little kitchen. And then I rented four more offices and four more. And finally had 18 lawyers as my tenants. And I don't know if that made me the smartest guy in the room or the dumbest guy in the room. But it turned out to be sort of an early co-working model for us. And I learned a couple things. A, I love the building. I love the architecture. And I learned that I loved renovating buildings and history as much as I love the movies, so I could combine the two of them. And so then I bought the old Mid-Central Fish building, which was about 55,000 feet of freezer space, and we did everything to renovate that building, put big windows in there, small tenants, and then at the very end I was able to take the garage and convince my banker to let me build the first Screenland Theater in the garage of this building to show little small underground films, films that weren't making it to the Tivoli and the Fine Arts and some of the other theaters. And I was able to combine those two and sort of create a brand, Screenland. After that, I just kept rolling along. I bought the Universal Pictures building. I bought a building at 19th and Wyandotte that had burned into a fire, and now it's the Mildred's Coffee House, and most recently, Papakino's Pizza. I bought the old Star Circulation building at 17th and McGee, which was an old car dealership. And it's now a variety of things, including Screenland and Tapcade and, a lot of small offices. Then I had also purchased the Granada Theater in Kansas City, Kansas, which was and still is beautiful. Probably not a primary, Mr. Mayor. Welcome. Probably not a primary spot to, do a single-screen movie theater just because the demographics were challenging for us, but a worthy, worthy building and one of those kinds of places where I feel it was worth my time to work and invest and remember that the communities such as Kansas City, Kansas, communities along Troost, communities east of our town are just as important and can be just as vibrant and certainly have just as good a people as any part of this city. So I renovated that building. We ran it as a theater for a year, and now it is a Latino church, Casa de Rios, and they're wonderful people, and the building is serving a wonderful purpose and is an anchor in its community. So as I did that, and I can, we can talk later if anybody wants to know about 63rd Street, but, my driving purpose and philosophy in developing buildings, other than the fact that I love doing it and it's fun and it's beautiful and it's like art, but my driving thing is it's part of a community revitalization. And Walt Wells and I were having a conversation, and he said something that I've always believed. He said, I love the fact that you go in and you don't just revive buildings, but you revive communities. You don't just fix up a building, but you understand that the people working in those buildings are serving a good purpose, and they're not always going to be able to pay the kinds of rents. So if we go, as we work toward Troost Avenue, as we work our way towards points east of Troost, we can't just gentrify it, because all we do then is move a line eastward. We don't really become a community, and community is about all of us sharing and collectively working together. And so you have to mentor and talk to small businesses because they are used to paying $7, $8 a foot for rent. But $7 or $8 a foot for rent does not provide healthy, well taken care of real estate. It doesn't provide the opportunity to put high efficient air conditioning systems that are better for all of us and better in the long term for the for the user. So, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, the challenges of renovating are not only going to be, the opportunities, but it's going to be the need for and the responsibilities, for making sure that you're inclusive of people who have long, long been a member of the community and you don't displace them. And that'll be the biggest challenge on Troost. But mark my words, the days of Troost Avenue's revitalization are coming and coming soon. Two reasons. One, economically it's moving that way. But two, you have a fortunate generation, as we all call them, millennials, who don't have the misperceptions and the old perceptions of anything negative about Troost. They just think it's a cool, neat area. They also, you know, don't get fearful about seeing people of different, colors and races and creeds. And, you know, it's a different perception. So they're going to embrace and be a part of that community. And I think that, you know, my generation or my community should be working, you know, hand in hand with them to responsibly move forward and bring that there. So a little bit about what we're doing, you know. In the last couple of years, I've been working along 63rd Street, moving down toward between Oak and Troost and what was an 85% vacant two-block corridor, which is now near 100% occupied corridor. And we've brought rents up to middle rents. Middle rents are important because you don't drive small business out. So about 4 or 5 years ago, David Breen and I were members of the Rock Hill Tennis Club. Several of us were. And I said to David, you know, the old Bryant School would be a great home for Rock Hill Tennis Club because we were displaced out of the Nelson home. And he said, yeah. And I said, you know, it's too big for the club, but I think it'd be a great little development. And David goes, I do too, and I would probably do that with you. He said, on my own, not with my company, which was Entertainment Properties Trust. And I said, no, that's great. And so he brought our friends Chip Walsh, who's an attorney, Lou Steele, who's a commercial real estate broker, and Bob Birkebile, who I need not give you any information about. He's a legend, but of course he is the great architect, Bob Birkebile from BNIM. We were all members of Rock Hill Tennis Club, and we went over there to buy that school, turn it into the Rock Hill Tennis Club, and then build some condos upstairs. Pretty far along in that process, the school district came back and said, oh, we just found out that we can't sell you this school. Thank you very much after $20,000 worth of architectural work. But they said, we have a deed restriction. And they were unwilling to, or at least unable to, go to a court and get that deed restriction lifted. And so we then turned our attention toward a couple other projects, and we purchased the old Sweeney School. And I will tell you, there were two things in this city that I saw happen in the 90s, the early 90s, that I wanted to undo from school districts. One was that ugly staircase over at on the Sweeney School, and I was successful in being a part of a team that removed that. And then two was I wanted to do something with the old Westport Junior High because it was so beautiful. Well, we purchased Sweeney School. We brought on Ernie Straub and another developer, and they took the lead on that, and they turned it into housing. And we turned our attentions toward Westport Junior High. And Bob Birkebile had a vision for Westport Junior High. You know, he had lived until recently in Hyde Park. I used to live in Hyde Park in Coleman Highlands. I'm not too far south at 52nd. David Brain lived in the Rock Hill neighborhood. He lives on 51st now. But Lou Steele lives over in Southmoreland. So we all had a very emotional interest in the building. Now, when we looked at this building, has anybody been in the school since we've done any renovations? Okay, a couple of hands, yes. And has anybody been in the school before we did the renovations? Okay, a couple more hands. Well, before we started, when we got to that school, it closed in 2010. It had been closed a year and a half, maybe 2 years. And junior high school. It was 160,000 square feet. It was the first junior high school in Kansas City, and then became for many years the junior college. And then it became a junior high and Westport Middle School in its final years after 1969. It had a new addition put on in 1992 and a garage. It had boilers that dated back to the 20s. It had giant halls. It had small classrooms. It had an exorbitant amount of common area space. So it was really a white elephant. That's why schools are so difficult to renovate. But what it also had was a beautiful auditorium. Now, it had been painted cream white, and it had flaky paint everywhere. It had a beautiful central hall. It had flaking paint and years of wax. It had a subcontractor who decided the best way to remove all the cafeteria tables from the fifth floor, you know, those giant folding tables, was to throw them down the stairs and let them bash into the walls and bash into doors and destroy woodwork. But we fixed it all. And, you know, my friends at the school board were so upset about it. And I said, well, we can fix it. Just don't hire that contractor ever again. But anyway, it had challenges. It needed a new air conditioning system. It needed a new boiler. It needed a new roof. It needed tuck pointing. It had single pane windows. It had, you know, it had a foot of water in the boys' gym down below. And it's built on a big U shape. And it is in the center. You have the auditorium, you know, the which you must on October the 11th between 4 and 6:30 go to the open house, and you can go to plexpod.com and you can get the Eventbrite invitation. It's free, but the auditorium sits on top of the girls' gym, which sits on top of the boys' gym, and so. It was fraught with challenge, but it was also an opportunity. And David and myself and Bob and Lou and Chip looked at this and thought to ourselves, shared office space. Now, you know, what is shared office space? Well, it's sort of like what I did back in the 90s. It's that concept that a guy gets an office or a woman gets an office, but they have access to a conference room, they have access to a kitchen, they have access to parking, they have access to all sorts of amenities, and they only pay for an office, and they share a shared economy. They share, you know, you only pay for a fifth of the conference room or a 15th of the conference room because you only use the conference room once in a while. Instead of renting a suite with a conference room and a kitchen and a, you know, and you don't have enough. In the 21st century, that model is more and more and more relevant. A lot of people are working out of their homes. A lot of people are working more efficiently with computers. They don't need a large staff. They don't need, the old model of a secretary and a receptionist and all of that. But they also just can't work at home all the time. You know, dogs, kids, cats, you know, you name it, loneliness, whatever it is. And so we find that a lot of them would like to have a place to rent an office. And the PlexPod was an operator, a guy named Gerald Smith, and he was running a shared office space in an old warehouse building at 85th and Marshall over in Kansas City, or Lenexa, Kansas. And we went over there and looked at it, and it was fascinating. We also went out to New York City, and we looked at WeWorks. And WeWorks is the big giant of this industry, and they're all over the country, including now in Kansas City. But what they were doing is they're renting a desk maybe a little bigger than this podium, or an office with two people or a single office. Kansas City, the office model works better than an open desk. And they were then saying, okay, you may go to the kitchen, the bar, dozens and dozens of little workstations, little work areas, couches, things like this. So we ended up making a deal with Gerald Smith and PlexPod to rent the entire building. And we ended up making a deal with Cultivate Kansas City. The deal is no rent. I mean, in other words, we wanted Cultivate Kansas City out in the green space. We did build a little more parking. And we wanted Westport Commons to end up being this vibrant community within a community. Now, when we first started, we really wanted a bigger not-for-profit model in there, but it was somewhat challenging just because it was $26 million to renovate that school, which is a whole lot more than we had anticipated it would cost to renovate that school. But we put the most efficient air conditioning system on the market today in that building. It's called variable refrigerant systems, but what it is an extremely highly efficient air conditioning system that makes operation better, but also is much, much more sustainable for the environment. We were able to make a deal. We did not want to build on to the green space, and so Cultivate Kansas City is going to start a fundraising campaign to build an urban farm training center greenhouse on the open ground. We were able to bring in the Sundry Food. We're going to have a little restaurant up there. If anybody's been to the Sundry downtown, you'll see how wonderful it is, how organic the food is, and how it'll be such a vibrant part of the community. And so we were able to, with Gerald, who I consider the very best at what he does, we were able to take all those open hallways, these giant hallways, and we were able to make them usable, make them workspaces, turn them into places where people had a shuffleboard court or a ping pong table or a little desk area. You know, the partnership, this is not my typical kind of a deal. I usually just do my own buildings, go to the bank, you know, use my own money. I have one business partner on a bunch of buildings, but it's just I'm in control. So for me to be a 22% owner was a little challenging, but I had people I've known for many years and worked with, and they are terrific, every single partner I've got. And I consider it an honor to be working with these guys. I mean, Bob Birkebeil, who wouldn't consider it an honor? David Brain, one of the best real estate guys in town. Lou Steele, huge commercial. Chip Walsh, great attorney, lots of experience. So I was delighted. And Centric Construction did the main work on the building, did a terrific job. They were also the one construction company that would put up with me. And I mean, I literally told them in the meeting, and Richard Wetzel, who's one of the owners, has known me since his late wife was my tenant over at the Commonwealth Theaters building. I said, you know, there's just some things I want to do and I don't want you touching. One was the auditorium. The other was an old mural room. And I'm sorry we don't have pictures just because I brought the wrong format, but for a movie guy, I'm not too tech savvy, but I went in and we took the old auditorium, and I brought in a woman named Carrie Stuckey, and Carrie is a gifted artist, and I hired her and her team of artists to take that auditorium, and literally we scraped, primed. You know, Don Maxwell, my friend, did the prep work. He's another artist, filmmaker, painter. And he did all the prep work, and then Carrie and her team came in and painted this thing with 15 colors. And it is, in my opinion, the most beautiful auditorium space in Kansas City. I mean, the most beautiful. It's stunning. And it has, and I have pictures on my phone just to prove it, but it has, it turned out to be wonderful. On the fourth floor, there was this wonderful room, and it has this mural on three sides all the way around, and or four sides actually, all the way around the room, and it was highly deteriorated, but what it was, it looked very much like the Thomas Hart Benton style. And so I did a little research. In 1951, when it was the junior college, the art teacher, you know, all the high school kids from across the street, big number of them came across to the junior college, including Ewing Kaufman, my late friend Terry Peak, and dozens of people I've known. Well, they had an art class, and she decided we were going to tell the history of Kansas City with students. And so the students all painted sections and signed their names. And we actually found one of them. You know, he was a class of 48, and he'll be there Wednesday to get his picture taken along with the new artist. And he's been there once before. So we hired Carrie and her team after she finished the auditorium to go through and restore meticulously that mural room. And I mean, it is a stunning gem. It is beautiful. It is why people do buildings. It's it's art on the walls, and it's good for another few years. So that was another one that I was able to be in charge of. And then I did a little bit of the site work, only because I thought they were charging too much. So, you know, but when you go there, you know, we want everybody to feel welcome. We want everybody to feel that it's part of the community. We want everybody to feel like, make sure I'm not going, no, I'm not, that it is a place that is just as much a community asset as it was when it was a teaching facility. Now, you know, I get asked a lot, what kind of incentives did you get? What kind of government money did you get? What kind of help did you get? Well, the deal we had with the school district was that we would not ask for property tax breaks. And in exchange, they sold the building very inexpensively. And so, you know, we purchased the building for $750,000, which was, you know, it's a 160,000-foot building with several acres of ground. But no one else would buy it. And then, of course, when assessment came, we had to get an attorney because they assessed it at a rate that would have made the place lose money for sure. And so we were able to work that out. But the biggest things we did were the historic tax credit and the new market tax credit. And the way that works is the historic tax credit, which you hear about these things, you hear about these incentives, and you either hear that they're the best thing in the world or that developers are just taking money and not paying their taxes. You know, I assure you that is not the case, especially in this environment. Since there were no property tax incentives on this one, I can talk more about the historic tax credits. Historic tax credits work this way. If you buy a building and you get it placed on the historic register as significant, you have to go through the local Landmarks Commission, you have to go through the State of Missouri SHPO office, then you have to go through the federal government. And if all three make a finding that it has architectural or historical significance, they will place it on the National Register. And then you must follow very strict guidelines in the renovation of that building to maintain the historic integrity while they understand that you need to maybe change the building to bring it into 21st century use. There are very strict rules there. If you do so, then at the end of the day, you may sell your, they look at the costs that had everything to do with the building itself. For example, we won't get any incentives for the annex because it's not historic. We don't get any incentives for the outside, for anything outside the skin of the building. We don't get any for any of the motion picture equipment in the auditorium. But we do get incentives, and that is we do get a rebate of sorts for the property for the improvements we made, and the you get 25% of the qualified renovation costs, not purchased, not non-qualified. It's a state tax credit, and you sell that about 90 cents on the dollar. Then you get 20% federal tax credit, and you have to set up. I just as soon launch a space shuttle as figure out how they set that up. I let the attorneys do that. It's the most complicated thing. But what it ended up doing was after we sold off those credits, we used a new market tax credit, which is a similar tax credit program which gives you two loans, and then they forgive one of the loans in 7 years, and it roughly ends up being about a 30% tax credit. What we ended up with after that was a position that we had debt that literally barely supports the rents that it brings. And the reason is old buildings like this are very difficult to renovate. You see the brick in there, the terracotta in there, the systems in there, the giant halls, the Carrara marble, an auditorium that had to be meticulously restored with plasterwork. None of those return rent to you. They return the beauty of the building. They return the part of the community, the history of our community. I'm so tired of people tearing things down and saying that we're improving the community. We're not. I don't go to Europe and France and, you know, I don't go to Paris to go see the new buildings. I don't study history to realize that too bad that it's gone. No, I want to be there to restore a building. And so, you know, and fortunately, our agencies these days are pretty savvy, and they don't just give you a heads-up nod. You have to demonstrate that what you're doing is going to truly return to the community, both economically and some intrinsically. Expansion Authority District many years ago, and they had some very valid concerns over on the west side, Broadway downtown, and we worked together to understand the significance and the impacts of tax breaks and what they did to the people around the neighborhood. Not only how did they affect their taxes, but were you really returning to the neighborhood? And if you can't beat that test, then you shouldn't get an incentive. No developer should. They're not designed to say, hey, come here and make a bunch of money, we'll give it away. They're designed to offset some of the costs that old building renovation brings forth as compared to building new buildings. And also the fact, plain and simple, that you don't get as much rent at 39th and Gillam as you do at 119th and Row. You just get more rent. But it's important. It's really important that the building stock here become a contributing part of the community. I watched what happened. I lived at 3414 Cherry from 1984 to 1992, and I remember all those beautiful apartments on Armour, and now they're being restored to market rates, and they're working on there. I watched for 15 years. I'd drive by behind Costco and see the old Luzier Cosmetics building and ask myself, what's going on with this building? What's ever going to go on with this building? And finally, we just saw a sign. I saw my buddy Pat Dunn's name on it as a broker, so I called. And, we decided to buy that building and restore that building. Now, I'll tell you, that brickwork alone was $75,000 to Retuck Point, and then I had to pay for a gifted artist, Jennifer Walker, to recreate some of the broken terracotta that blew off in that storm we had this summer. But, that building will have a mansard roof put back on. None of that pays you any more rent. Matter of fact, you don't make as much. But the historic tax credits hopefully will make it more viable and make it more usable. So, when it comes to what goes on at Westport, one of the things that my partners and I are always very conscientious of is, what does it do to our neighbors? How does it affect our neighbors? So the first thing we did, and I will tell you, the school district had a lot to do with it. They held forums to talk about the proposed uses of these schools. Shannon Jacks was really in charge of that, and she did an excellent job. So we had several community meetings to discuss what we wanted to do, how we wanted to do it, what did the neighborhood associations think about it, what did the community think about it. We listened. We made some adjustments to what we were going to do with the buildings. We had first looked at the Westport Junior High as a housing project, and it was accepted well enough by everybody, but it wasn't something that really excited me. But then, when we found that being an office and an office building with people coming and events and an event center was more popular, and we thought we could make it work that way, that was good input. And we also, truly believe that having Cultivate Kansas City on site is going to make it very community-oriented. When we bought Westport Senior High, which is next in line, we made an agreement with all the neighborhood associations that we would maintain walking paths because everybody was using the Westport grounds as kind of a parkland and a walking path, and it connects beautifully to Hyde Park, the park Hyde Park, and to the walking trails along there. So it was not a hard stretch at all for us to make that agreement. We would encourage that. You don't want to be an island. You want to be part of it. So, It's a challenging but fun and incredibly rewarding thing we've done over there. And the building is no less than stunning. I mean, I can't describe to you how beautiful that auditorium looks, and I can't describe that mural room and those Carthage marble floors in the main area and the talented people that worked on that project. And the talented guy, Gerald Smith, and his team that runs PlexPod. A couple of my partners have some interest in PlexPod. I don't. I'm off doing my own thing on Gillam and 63rd and having some fun and, doing what I want. But, it's a good company, and it's a great use for the building. And, I couldn't be happier with the way it turned out. I couldn't, I think the only thing that if you have a regret, We didn't get as many not-for-profits into that building as we wanted to. We had a major not-for-profit that wanted to be in there, but the cost of renovating and even the middle rents cost of the Plexpod model, which, you know, they say, hey, you get an office, you pay $450 for a desk, $900 for an office, but you get use of the whole building. Well, that model was pretty challenging for some of the not-for-profit community. And my wife is over at Support Kansas City, and she was explaining to me that that's just not the way it works there. So, you know, I think we wish we could have got a few more. Now, we've got some. We got City in Motion Dances in there. We've got a couple of small not-for-profits in there. But, you know, the bulk of it is market-rate companies or, you know, young entrepreneurs. I would say right now, we have 300 people in the building working every day. The goal, that'll come up to 400 when AdKnowledge and some of their companies move in. The goal is to get to about 500 to 600 people in the building. It can sustain 700 or 800, but if it 400 makes it work. 400 makes the thing pay its rent back to the partners. None of the partners are really making a lot of money on this. It's a long-term play, but that's okay. You know, you don't do every single building, and you should never do every single real estate deal to make money. I have a very worthy tenant in a building I just bought, a very worthy tenant who's going to have to need some good office space there, and we're going to take care of them because they do great work in our community. There are some great organizations that I have worked with, and that includes Jewish Family Services over at 63rd and between Oak and Cherry. I don't know if anybody's seen their new headquarters building. We made an unusual deal with them to come in and let them fundraise a lot of their improvements, and then we gave them a very, you know, very long-term lease with very low rents, and that's great because, you know, I don't want my developments just to be a bunch of entrepreneurs. I want it to be a mix socially of viable not-for-profits, viable social services. I want to achieve a racial and economic diversity in my communities, but you've got to do that carefully. I think if you put too many, you know, too much affordable housing into one single building, it becomes challenging. But if you spread it out and bring them into the community, it works wonderfully. So we're, you know, we think that we do have a few small not-for-profits at the Plexpod that are working wonderfully, and we hope to increase that number. But, you know, at that point, it becomes a very great social dynamic and a great microcosm and an example of what you can do with an old school. So, you know, it's been a fun project. It's going to look better and better in the next year with more and more landscaping. I encourage everybody to go in there and look around and talk to the people who are working there and talk to the people who are running the facility, and they will be more than happy to give you a tour. And anytime we have a property, if anybody, you know, we always send people out to clean up trash, remove graffiti, things like that. But we welcome a call when you see that somebody has tagged a building or there's trash somewhere or the weeds aren't good. We welcome those calls because we have a responsibility to make sure, especially the senior high school building, which we still haven't decided exactly what the use will be. We have some other partners on that. But, you know, we get a few phone calls on that, and we run out immediately, and we try to keep it policed up and cleaned up and open to the public and lit. But it's probably going to be a combination. It could be some residential. We could add some more residential there. It could be some office space, you know, maybe a school. You know, right now we have a prohibition, you know, that we couldn't put a school in there, but more and more school district at least is open-minded about seeing what might be a good addition to the community. So lots of good things. Be happy. George, is this a time to take questions?
All I can say is wow. Butch will take questions for a few minutes from the audience. We'd like to make sure that those questions are questions and not statements.
I have a question relating to the art from 1948 that's uh-huh. being restored. The way that we see history now might well be significantly different from the way that they saw it in 1948. Can you comment on exactly what aspects of Kansas City history are featured down there, And how does that relate to my issue of how we see history now? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's an excellent point. I can illustrate that point, before I talk about it. Several years ago, I ran across an old advertisement for The Jazz Singer, and it was, a little archive piece. And I had it out, and one of my employees pointed out, I don't care how significant the movie was or whatever, you can't hang a picture with a man in blackface. And I go, and she was serious and set me straight. I go, you're right, I can't. It's like Song of the South. But in regard to this building here, the mural room depicts Kansas City from frontier days all the way through what was then in 1951 from the class of 48 artists, a vibrant downtown modern Kansas City. There are depictions of African Americans and Indians, but they're not particularly stereotyped in any way, but they do show, everything from farmers to settlers to people, building the Union Station, things like this. We didn't find anything that was particularly, reflective of, the old views of history. But the mural room is a pretty good depiction. I was told last summer, I went to Symphony in the Prairie, and somebody mentioned, they go, you see the history of cowboys, but everybody forgets that the majority of all cowboys in the United States were African American because they were the ones rustling the cattle, and we forget that. Other parts of art in the building, Gerald hired our artist Carrie Stuckey, and she did interpretive murals of historic events in Kansas City, a young Walt Disney, a young Hemingway, different people like that, a mouse, an inkwell, things like that. You'll see that throughout the building where she was commissioned to do that kind of art. But and I'd love to get some interpretation and criticism on that mural room because, sometimes you're so excited about what you see that you don't look at some of those images. Okay?
I've been in the building, and you've done a marvelous job. And I have friends working in there. But I'd like to ask a question about attention that I'm pretty sure you are cognizant of. Just yesterday, there was a vote to elect the directors of the Transportation Development District to extend the streetcar down Main Street.
Yes.
So that on one hand, there is the tacit set of assumptions in the development world about what will happen if that project goes forward. And there are lots of people who question whether the trickle eastward will ever pass truce. So that's one issue. The second issue has to do with the likely average earnings of people that are occupying co-working spaces if we look 5 years down the road. These are people that are working in the gig economy. They're trying to start businesses, but a small fraction of them will succeed, and the rest of them are going to be hustling, to put bread on the table. And so I'm interested in the extent to which you're sort of planning in terms of payback terms takes into account the rather precarious, unanswered, at least unexplored questions with co-working, because I see a lot of buildings that have been refurbished and, frankly, spend a lot of time wondering where the people that 10 years from now will be making those work.
Sure. No, that's a... the co-working model, as I had indicated, is a model that does rely on the fact that you have a lot of small entrepreneurs coming in and working and a lot of small businesses, and they're just a very small portion of them will make a living. But what it also includes really is a vast number of established small independent people working who don't particularly want to work out of their house, who need a meeting space and don't want to go to a coffee shop. In my experience, my first building, of course, was all these lawyers, and it was a good model for them, solo practitioners, they would work there. They sustained a living. I went 5.5 years without a single vacancy at my Commonwealth Theaters building with 18 lawyers. I went the entire 18 years I owned the building with less than 5% vacancy. I cater to, and I have rented to, I have about 15 or 18 buildings now, and I have, over the years I've had 20 or 25. And I have always rented to small entrepreneurs. I can give you the name of a dozen small businesses that started in my building, Snow & Company, Darren & Co. Salon. I mean, dozens of little businesses that actually started in our buildings. And we have maintained 95% occupancy for 20 years. Now, we did that by understanding ahead of time who might be a good tenant and who might not just be a fit. But for the most part, we always work with them. If they set me down at breakfast and say, I can't pay rent this month, I said, well, I can't forgive the rent, but I can certainly let you have some time. And please don't tell my tenants, but I have never, ever charged a late fee to anybody in 23 years, ever. But we work with them and understand that while you do have turnover, if you offer a reasonably priced product, you are not going to be the one that is getting left, with vacancies. And see, the co-working model does beat a traditional office rental by about 40% in overhead for a small business. It's a much more efficient shared economy. And so you do know you're going to have a lot of them that come and go, but the truth is, for example, my building over at 601 East 63rd, that used to be the Brick Doctor's building that's now got glass on it, I'm 100% occupied, and every time I've got a waiting list for single offices. So if somebody, I had a guy that says, hey, my model just isn't working, and within 3 weeks I rented his entire office, and I let him out of his lease, and it works. So, I do believe firmly that we're not going to make money bolting fenders on Fords in the next generation. You know, the days of that job up at Clay Como, where up by Liberty, where I grew up, where people put in 30 years, those days are gone. Unfortunately, I think the manufacturing sector is forgetting that a healthy middle class is a healthy economy, and I think we're getting too big a disparity. So more and more people are working. We can call them entrepreneurs, but a lot of them are just working as independent contractors. So I think that the health of what we're doing is going to be growing a good business model based upon, instead of a suite of offices, a single workspace and then a larger space to work in. And a good example is AdKnowledge, which is a pretty good tech company in this town, is moving there December the 1st. And then on the streetcar, I think you made a great point. It's got to be balanced. I am an advocate for a streetcar down Main Street, but for me, it's a lot about the fact that I'm tired of people driving in cars all the time. I'd like to see us, but I also think we absolutely must be taking a spur down 31st or 63rd. We've got to make sure that people can get to jobs from all parts of the community. So, yes. Larry.
I wanted to thank you for this wonderful presentation. Wanted to ask about Westport Senior High. I know you didn't deal with it extensively in your discussion, probably because it's been such a painful experience. And I wondered if you could take us through the years that it has taken for you to work with the city and the school board and the community and all that, and how that's been bounced around, just to give everybody a sense of what a struggle you're going through to get to get this project going. By the way, Mayor Charles Wheeler is here in 1942, and I'm a graduate in 61, so we're really interested.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yes, I always love to see the mayor. That's a good point. Okay, Westport Senior High. Was it a struggle? Absolutely. Should it have been a struggle? Absolutely. That is a huge community asset. That is a huge community asset. This Westport Junior and Westport Senior High are 250,000 square feet, 17 acres of ground, very significant part of Midtown. On the 39th Street bus lines that take us from east and west, on the Gillum Road corridor, which I think is incredibly important. So the school district, when they started looking at what to do with these schools, considered several uses for the buildings. The junior high, the three top projects were really ours. Another one by the Hassenflew Companies, which was going to be low-income or affordable housing, but it was going to use LIHTC low-income tax credits. And another developer, Steve Faust. And Fouch Brothers, who are doing the Kemper Arena and have done some terrific stuff around town. And the neighborhoods through those community forums for the junior high chose our group as their preferred model, and the school district then negotiated with us to make that work. One of the things they prohibited us to do was use it as a school again. And although, you know, like I say, I think they keep an open mind. The senior high was going to be the Fouch Brothers, and they were finding a lot of challenges on trying to make it into housing, and they also were getting some pushback from the community. And so the school district became very concerned with the pushback from the community, and so they had more and more forms, and they invited us to take another look at the senior high. Once we did, and once we became part of the senior high project, Fouch agreed to withdraw from that because he was working on and successfully renovated the West High School over by Summit Street down 19th. And Michael, is that 19th and Summit? Yeah. And then he was over working on Kemper Arena. Now, the senior high does present real challenges. It has got an addition to the south that is not the best construction I've ever seen. It would be much closer to the worst construction I've ever seen. It's got these tremendous hallways again. We are trying to decide if there's enough of a market for additional plexpod space. I think you do have to limit you have to kind of keep it there. It does have a lot of grounds, so it does have the opportunity to increase some density in housing. I think it presents a lot of opportunities, but we brought on a financial partner in that, Mariner Properties. They're local. They do a lot of stuff. They actually bought my old Screenland building, outbid me, but that's another story. But so the senior high will be hopefully thoughtfully developed to be a good partner to the junior high. In other words, some office space, but maybe more residential space. When I redeveloped properties, as I did the as I did 63rd Street, when we did 63rd Street, I owned six buildings between Oak and Holmes. And when we redid those, I was very, very selective in who I would rent to and how I would rent. So I knew my big, tall building was going to be office space. I knew John Hoffman was going to build apartments at the corner of 63rd and Holmes. And then when I bought the building that would become the Jewish Family Services, which had an acre of ground, which I only bought because I didn't want a Jimmy John's there. I wanted it rehabbed. I didn't want it torn down. I sold John some ground so he could build townhomes with some homeownership. But then the little A-frame that was the old University Bank building, I wanted food in there. And I didn't want a Starbucks, and I didn't, you know. But believe me, I turned down every cell phone seller in the city must have called me for that space. And but then Robin Krause came in, and that was perfect because what Robin did was bring good, healthy food and good, healthy alternatives to that neighborhood. And we had office space across the street. We had residential across the street, and we had a good mix. So as we look at the use of Westport, we must understand how that building will serve its purpose as it relates to the office space across the street. Oh, and we bought the fast stop across the street, the building, and so, you know, they've been hopefully going to be good tenants, and you know, across from there. But we want to know how the Westport Senior High will interact and be involved with the junior high and the 39th Street corridor. So I would imagine some housing, some office, and possibly a couple other commercial uses. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you all.
So I understand next week, next Sunday, there'll be a talk by Max Skidmore, the New Deal. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's presentation, PlexPod Westport Commons, with Speaker Butch Rugby. This program was recorded on Sunday, October 8th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church. All Souls Forum is edited and produced for broadcast by Christina Frazier. Our theme song was composed, performed, and recorded by musician Fred Potter. This program will be available for podcast within 10 days of broadcast on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. Remember, you can also find archived All Souls podcasts and many other interesting and enlightening public affairs programs produced by KKFI on the KKFI website. Thanks for joining us this evening, and we hope you tune in next week, same time, same place, when we will continue the conversation here at 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station.